Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Well, good evening and welcome to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trepsker along with Jim Connolly. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Ed. It's nice to actually at the beginning of the show be on here with you for the first time, maybe all season.
Yeah, it kind of worked out well that way. Sometimes it has been a bit of a struggle.
Miracles are beautiful.
But anyway, before we get started, two things I want to do. One, I want to mention our guest tonight first in our 8:20 segment. We're going to be joined by Dick Umiley, the head coach for 25 seasons at the University of New Hampshire. And then at 8:35, 8:40, somewhere in there, a good friend among journalists, and that's Mr. Neil Koepke, who for years covered Michigan State with the Lansing State Journal and now writes for the team website and covers college hockey in general. He's a wealth of knowledge and has been to probably more Frozen Fours than a lot of the people who cover them have been alive.
Yeah, I think that's right, because if you break a streak, I think he'd be near four straight. He had one year that he missed about 6 or 7 years ago that broke his streak. He would have an unmatchable streak of Frozen Fours. He's a legend in his own craft.
Before we get into things, we also want to mention that our sponsor through the Frozen Four is the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Don't get left out in the cold this spring. Be there as the best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27 through 29 and continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 to make a date with champions. Well, some programs, in fact, the three Eastern leagues are already getting into the preliminaries, the league conference championships heading toward the NCAAs, and those get underway this weekend in Hockey East, ECAC Hockey, and Atlantic Hockey.
Yeah, and for me, it's my favorite time of the year. Once we get to March, I think once the calendar turns, and especially now in the East, where that first weekend of the season, which kind of was used to be reserved for the final weekend of regular season play, is now in the East, at least in the three Eastern conferences, is playoffs. And I think that's phenomenal. The longer you can play playoff hockey, the better, I think. I would love to see the playoffs go for months upon months. I think the Stanley Cup playoffs, though many people think it's tedious that it goes on for months, is wonderful. Best of seven series are awesome. You can't do that in college hockey, and we kind of resounded to best of three first two rounds of these playoffs for the conferences. But still, I look at double overtime and triple overtime games. As long as I'm not a journalist on deadline trying to cover that game, I say play seven times all the time, because you can't do a regular season. You can't go past 5 minutes in a regular season game. So I love the overtime concept. I love the excitement that goes along with playoff hockey. And I really look forward to this weekend every year.
Well, the only time I'm not looking forward to overtime hockey is when it's semifinal night and it's overtime in the first game. But other than that, I agree with you.
Always on the rough one. That always makes it a little more difficult, especially if you're one of those two teams that's sitting in your locker room dying to get on the ice for that late game. We've seen it in NCAA tournaments, seen it in regionals, happen all the time. That always is one of the more difficult things, kind of sit back and say, okay, we're going out there soon.
Yeah, And it also makes a big difference for the next day. You know, the team that plays the later game may get started 9 o'clock, 9:30, and have to turn around for a championship the next day. This week in your TMQ column that you and Matthew Semich write every Tuesday morning in TMQ, Tuesday morning quarterback. It's sort of like ESPN. Nobody remembers what that stands for anyway. But you guys were talking about the path to playoff victories, path to the championship in the leagues by the Eastern leagues. And let's go from what you guys or what Matthew in general said was the most difficult and going backwards and get your thoughts on it, and I'll chip in too. Quinnipiac, Matthew suggested that they may be the most vulnerable of the league regular season champions, as it's been a pretty tight ECAC. Certainly St. Lawrence has been pretty hot this season, and it's, although they lost a pair last weekend, it's coming in with some pretty good momentum.
Yeah, you know what, I think that all the regular season champs have vulnerability, maybe not in that first round, maybe not in the quarterfinal round that they'll get a buy into, but in the semifinals, when it's one game, I don't think that anybody is stacked up to be an expert for one game. That's one of the most difficult things in college athletics, I think, is to just win that single game. That's why you see, you know, the great parts of the Big East basketball tournament, the ACC basketball tournament, those conferences that have played those single elimination formats for a long time. It's so hard to just not make mistakes for that 48 minutes in basketball or whatever it is, 40 minutes in basketball, 60 minutes in hockey. And I think hockey has even a thinner line because it comes down to one or two goals as opposed to maybe one or two baskets, three or four baskets. You know, you just don't have that type of offensive, you know, kind of margin of error. So I think that hockey has this razor-thin edge that you're walking up. You're the number one seed, and it's so hard to complete. Now, in terms of Quinnipiac, I just think that that's a team that I think walks into the playoffs very hot. They've played very well. But they did lose a game in the last weekend of the season. Now, you can sometimes say, well, it's the last weekend of the season. They clinched their regular season title. Maybe we don't have to worry about it too much. But the reality is you hate to go into the playoffs on a loss. And that's one of those things that, as a head coach, it's one of those you just want to avoid. Even if you can get a tie out of that last game, there's a benefit just for the psyche. How can a coach just wipe the slate clean? I think that's always a question we have to ask as you go into the playoffs, and it's more important for maybe the 9, 10, 11, 12 seeds in the league than it is for the number one seed, but everybody has to wipe that slate clean and say, we've got to go out and do our job tonight, and that is what can be the most difficult thing. I don't think that any of the three Eastern team conferences champions, Boston University, Robert Morris, and Quinnipiac, have an easy path. But I do say that just the way that the ECAC plays out year after year after year, where teams kind of struggle to get out of their conference and they struggle in conference play, that makes me think that, especially when you get into the single game out of the semifinals, you just never know what's going to happen.
Well, it was an interesting end of the season in Atlantic hockey, particularly for the teams that were on the bubble. And everything went the right direction for Rochester Institute of Technology. RIT had the chance to finish anywhere from third to seventh in the league that weekend. They needed a combination of two losses by Bentley and a sweep, or after a loss, I think it was Air Force's loss, a sweep, and that, or at least 3 points on the weekend against Mercyhurst to finish third. And all those things came together. And that was really interesting. In fact, some thumbs up you guys gave Rick Godkin. We were talking about it as we were watching the game, that it might happen. A tie was as good as a loss for, or as bad as a loss for Mercyhurst. So Rick Godkin in overtime pulled his netminder. RIT got an empty netter to win that one. That was that whole combination that came together. But as you look at that conference, Robert Morris, the last two weekends of the season, now granted on the Friday of the second to last weekend, they had clinched the league. But their top line on that weekend against RIT was held to one goal and one assist, while RIT's top line had 5 goals and a total of 11 points. And last weekend, Niagara held Robert Morris to just 3 goals on the weekend, and that's against an offense that's been averaging 4 goals a game. So it's not like they're running the last couple of weeks with a huge amount of momentum. Meanwhile, Canisius has been finishing strong, and RIT is 10-4-2 since Christmas time in the league. So there are teams with some momentum going into that, so it may not be as much of a slam dunk as Matthew was suggesting. Really, that conference from top to bottom is far more competitive than it was even 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, I look at that one game against Niagara, and the fact that when you look at the pairwise, Niagara is the lowest team pairwise right now. If you're supposed to be this far and away blowaway team in a conference, you should be able to take care of business. We're seeing in the West, we're seeing teams in the West that have been dominant all season. They're going in. I'm just going to point to North Dakota. Went in last weekend against a very tough St. Cloud team, and they took care of business. They won both games. They're on a pretty good winning streak now. If you're that big of a team in your conference and you have dominated from start to finish, I don't care if you're maybe trying to tweak things or test things out. You've still got to win games. And it says something that you're not winning games. I do want to go back to the point you made about Rick Gotkin pulling his goaltender in overtime. I love the play, and that's why we gave him the thumbs up in Tuesday morning quarterback today. It's interesting to see how many times I've seen it come into a possibility in college hockey and coaches don't do it. And I'll never forget, I'm going back now, probably 5 years, and Jerry York at Boston College was playing New Hampshire on the final night of the regular season, and they had to win the game to win the league title. And they were in overtime, and a tie would have given New Hampshire, I believe, the league title. And Jerry York did not pull his goaltender. It might have been Boston University, whatever it was, but the team could not win a league title unless they won the game. And Jerry York did not pull his goaltender in overtime, not because he didn't know what the situation was. He said after the game he was worried about the pairwise rankings, and if they lost that game, it could hurt them more than trying to win a league title if they pulled mm-hmm. their goaltender and scored. So it's interesting where Mercyhurst is in a conference where all of the teams are outside of the top 16 of the pairwise that you can pull it. If you're in that exact same situation in a conference that is competing more actively in the pairwise, can a coach do it? So I love the fact that Rick did it. It didn't work, but I love the call. I think it's exciting to see a coach do it. The last time I remember seeing it was, I think it was 1993, and Mike McShane did it when he was at Providence in an overtime series where it was like 2 games total goals or something like that, mm-hmm. and he got into overtime of the second game knowing that a tie wouldn't have done his team any good. They had to win the game by a goal. So I love seeing it. You just don't see it enough in college hockey, and I think that sometimes the pairwise can be used to explain the reason that you don't see it.
I got to give Rick Gotkin and Mercier some credit also. Coming into Saturday after an 8-0 loss the night before, he juggled 3 out of 4 forward lines, all his defensive pairs, sat 3 of his top players, and came very close in that contest. So that's got to be very tough to prepare a team after a drubbing like that.
Well, and the other thing about Mercyhurst right now, they're not playing well. They go into the playoffs despite being a notably very good team. They have been strong for much of the season. I think that a lot of people thought that they might even win the league this year. They haven't had the season that they wanted, particularly in the last maybe month and a half of the season. So I think that Rick Gotkin might have shaken up his lines a little bit just to say, guys, what's going on? We got to play better hockey. We have the talent in this dressing room. How do I wake you up? And I don't know if that was his way of doing it or he just needed a fresh look, or sometimes coaches just have to let out some frustration and say, find a way, and here's the lineup I'm giving you. So, but I don't know that his lineup shakeup didn't have more to do with the fact that he just doesn't know where his team is headed right now.
Well, it has been tough. They lost Jimmy Sargent, their top goaltender, a season-ending and basically college career-ending hernia surgery. So they've had to go with a freshman and sophomore in net who played well on Brendan Wildung played well on Saturday. Both goaltenders got in on the 8-0 game. But anyway, just one last thing on Atlantic hockey before we move along. There's probably only going to be one Hobey Baker candidate out of Atlantic hockey. And to me, it seems like it's coming down to two people, and the play near the end of this stretch seems to point to one of them. All along through the season, people are always talking about Cody Waito from Robert Morris. People noticed him last year as Robert Morris went to the NCAAs. Meanwhile, RIT's Matt Garbowski got his second hat trick of the season last weekend, including a shorthanded goal that was part of the number one plays of the week in NCAA.com. And I think that he may be putting a stamp on it, and we may see him as the guy who comes out of Atlantic Hockey and not Waito.
Well, I think there's no doubt that you look at the way that Garbowski has finished the season. He now has 24 goals in the nation to Champagne from Union, who I think might be a Hobie hat-trick guy. I think Garbowski has to be there in the top 10 of the Hobie Baker. There's no way you can leave him out. If you do, then there's something wrong with the selection process, in my opinion. Can Waito get in there? I don't know. He is not that he's fallen off. I mean, 40-point season is still a pretty fantastic season through 34 games, and he's got some playoff games ahead of him, and you know, there's still a little bit of time. But that's a big drop from 31 goals as a junior to 19 goals as a senior, and a little bit disappointing for Cody Waito. But he's had a fantastic career. I know that Derek Schooley loves him and thinks, you know, that he is one of those gritty little guys that's gone in and kind of fought the good fight his years. I don't know if there's an NHL career ahead for him. There's definitely a professional career ahead for Cody Waito, but is he Hobie Baker this year? I'm not sure, especially when you think about the fact that he dipped in goal scoring and he's still six of goals came from the power play. Maybe not the most impressive statistics that you need to be that Hobie Baker top 10 guy. But if you leave Garbowski off at this point, the whole process is a joke, in my opinion. He has had such a wonderful season, and he's finished it so well. There's no way that he's not. I mean, he's number four in the country in scoring right now. In points per game, he's right up to 12. When you have 46 points, you've done something great in the college hockey.
Well, that leaves us with one other league to mention, and we'll get into it a lot more with our first guest, Dick Umili. But BU, Matthew Semich, who granted doesn't see as much of Hockey East as you do, really is putting his stamp on BU being really the favorite to win the Hockey East championship. But, it's the same sort of situation as in the other leagues. They have been very good, but there are other teams who have been almost that good.
And there's something very interesting when you look at BU, and we're going to go with Dick Umili. But if everything were to go as planned and the 5-8 seeds win this week in the quarterfinals in Hockey East, the 8th seed is New Hampshire. And they have been playing light hockey really for the last month and a half, really since the Christmas break, but been playing very good for the last month and a half. If Boston University has to face New Hampshire, a team that blew tied them up at the Whittemore Center and barely beat them at home, at the Aganis Arena. If BU had played this team, that could be a really tough first-round matchup for a number one seed. In Boston College, we remember how powerful BC was a year ago with the ultimate college hockey line. They lost to Notre Dame first round of the playoffs. I would not be surprised if everybody holds serve. That's a big if. But if 5-8 all hold serve in New Hampshire to play BU, I don't think that the first round, that their quarterfinal match is even easy. Forget about the fact that if they get to the Garden, they could be matched up against a team like UMass Lowell that's played them tough, or a team like Providence that is just red hot. So I don't sell BU as such easy path to a championship. They're going to the NCAA tournament. They're going to be a tough out there. But they have not been the dominant team that you would hope they would be. I mean, they had a very tough beanpot final Monday night against Northeastern. They lost Northeastern Friday night. Yes, they came back and dominated on Saturday night. They're just not the tough team that you would expect to be dominating at this time of year. Maybe the Boston College teams that won a lot of national titles in the last 7-8 years. BU doesn't have that characteristic yet. Doesn't mean they can get it, but they don't have it yet. So that's what makes them a tiny bit vulnerable.
Well, and of course, we'll get to talk about UConn, who's New Hampshire's opponent, but the job Mike Cavanaugh has done there, you certainly can't overlook the Huskies.
Well, a fantastic job. And Robbie's in goal. Whenever you have a hot goaltender in the playoffs, and we'll talk to Umili about it, and he'll expound on it. Whenever you have a goaltender that is solid and can steal games, they become a dangerous team in the playoffs. I'm proud of the way that Mike Cavanaugh's team has played this first season in Hockey East. You know, they were in a position a few weeks ago to finish, you know, as high as 5 or 6. They end up finishing 9. They don't get a home ice spot in the first round, but they are a good team. They are a quality opponent. I don't thought having to face a team like that. They you just never know how sneaky they could be in terms of, you know, playing a defensive shutdown game, winning the neutral zone, and have a goaltender that stops 40 or 50 shots if he has to. So, dangerous team. I look forward to talking to Dick Umili about as an opponent for New Hampshire this weekend.
Well, we're going to break right now, and we'll get Dick on the line and continue with USCHO.com's USCHO Live after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gianta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden. Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
Go, Caleb!
Come on, hit a homer, Jesse!
Let's go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Obvious. Oh, hey, guys. Did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that. I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Frozen Four returns to Boston.
He buries it!
Be there and experience it live.
Go!
April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly. We're just having a little difficulty connecting with New Hampshire coach Dick Umiley. We'll keep working on that, but we're back here on USCHO Live. Jim, we talked quite a bit about the teams in the East. We're coming down to the last weekend of the season, though, for the Western Conferences. And things are pretty interesting in all of those. Already North Dakota has clinched at least a part of the overall conference with 47 points.
Yeah, they've played very well. And Miami, the fact that Miami is up there and the fact that Miami was competitive to try to maybe be even co-champions is very impressive. But North Dakota has been kind of lights out in the second half of the season. They are, I think they should have had all 50 votes in our poll this week. They had 49 of the 50. But you're talking about the last regulation loss was way back on January 9th when they lost 4-1 to Minnesota Duluth. This team has been white hot since then. They had an overtime loss at Nebraska. They won a shootout against Denver on a game that went to overtime. But it's been win after win. And when you look at the numbers in the goals against category since that game against Minnesota Duluth, they haven't given up more than three goals. And I always say that that's a great formula. If you can hold it to two or less every game, you're doing great. But three or less is fine. As long as you have offense, and we know North Dakota has offense, and it maybe hasn't been on display as much as you'd expect it to be. But they've played some pretty tough teams in their conference of late. But they've been shutting down opponents. Three goals against last weekend, three goals against the weekend before. They gave up five goals in two games against Denver, but they scored seven, and they got a win and a shootout win. That's enough in their division. The way they're playing right now, they are as solid a team as we believe they would be. And when I look at the picture of the season in their consistency, there's been a lot of up and down, with Minnesota jumping into the number one slot. You've had Minnesota State in there, Boston University. I believe Michigan Tech got some time up there. But in terms of staying right there, they have been the number one, number two, or number three team in the USCHO poll for the entire season. They haven't dropped below three all season. I think that is just a sign of wonderful consistency. They are playing some good hockey. I think they're a very tough team to beat. And I expect to see them in Boston. If they're not in Boston, then that might be kind of a failure on the season, because they are that good of a team that they should be there. This is the best team in college hockey, in my opinion, right now.
And 49 out of 50 voters agree with you. You're one of the 49. But what's also remarkable for the NCHC, last year in the first year of the conference, people were saying, because they didn't do quite as well on the season as they might have expected. This year we're seeing out of that conference what the founders of the conference expected. And we see five of the top eight teams in the pairwise right now are from NCHC. It's remarkable.
On good footing in the pairwise, too. St. Mm-hmm. Cloud was in there until they played North Dakota and lost twice last week. They were right in there. I think they started last weekend around 12. They did drop. I think they're 17 or 18 now, yeah. But they're right on the bubble. You know, Minnesota Duluth is not that far off. I mean, when you look at it, you're talking about North Dakota, Miami, Denver, and Minnesota Duluth. All four of those teams have 19-plus wins at this point. Nebraska-Omaha has 17 wins but has played a solid enough schedule and has played very well outside of the league. They're 6-2-2 outside of the league. Those are good enough numbers. When your league schedule is as tough as this league has been, the fact of the matter is Colorado College, I wouldn't want to play them right now. They're playing good hockey, so you're talking about that's your two-win team at the bottom of your league. Every other team is scary. Western Michigan, these are teams I don't want to have to face in a quarterfinal round. It's going to be it's going to be a war in those playoffs in the NCHC. But, you know, moreover than that, I believe that, you know, you're talking about some really good teams in the national picture. North Dakota, Miami, and Denver, I think, are three of the top teams in the country week in, week out, and they will be, you know, three of the toughest teams in this tournament.
When we turn to the WCHA, three teams in the pairwise, and that's the top three in the standings, Minnesota State, Michigan Tech, and Bowling Green. I would not be surprised to see all three of them make the postseason, although Bowling Green's sort of right on the bubble in the pairwise right now.
And Bowling Green, they give me a lot of pause right now. They lost to Ferris State, not a bad team. They got swept by Northern Michigan, and then they lost a game up at Alaska. They beat Alaska 4-3 on Friday night, but then lost 6-1 and got thumped up at Alaska. Now they're going to play Alabama Huntsville, two wins you're supposed to take out of that conference if you're one of the top teams. They're going to have to do something to prove themselves. They're in the pairwise, but I don't know how solid a footing they're going to hold at this point. I think they're a good team. I think they have done a little bit to kind of have their resume, but you know, right now you're talking about a 19-win team. I think that you need to have 22 wins or so to deserve your spot in the NCAA tournament. Yes, teams get in with automatic qualifiers that have nothing to do with that, but I think 22 is kind of a magic number. So you're going to sweep Alabama Huntsville, you think, this weekend. That means they have to get out of their playoffs. And right now they're teed up to play Northern Michigan, a team that just gave them fits. They might rather play Alaska, which I believe they had better success with earlier this season. But Bowling Green might be the one team out of that I worry about the most. Minnesota State, Michigan Tech, no problem with either of those teams. They're going to make the NCAA tournament. They're probably going to go pretty far in their conference playoffs. Close race, though, you know, heading into the last week of the season for them. Should be a very interesting one to watch.
In the Big Ten, Michigan has moved into first place, just a one-game, a three-point lead over Minnesota. But right now, Minnesota sitting at number 11 in the pairwise. Michigan tied for 15th and probably would be on the bubble or out of the playoffs at that position. It's possible that you could see just one team from the Big Ten make the NCAAs this year.
Yeah, what a nightmare that would be for that league. It's just not what they expected when they signed up for this whole thing. They were kind of expecting at least, you know, Michigan and Minnesota, and then you're supposed to have Wisconsin with you. You know, those are your three powers, and then your other three schools, Michigan State, Penn State, and Ohio State, are kind of bringing up the rear a bit and trying to play catch up. This was the expectation 3 years ago when all of this was kind of a brainchild. But Minnesota is really the only team, and they have not played very consistent hockey. They're the only team that has played really good hockey. Michigan at times has been unbelievable, and I think right now Michigan is playing very, very good hockey. But this conference is not on solid footing when you look at the NCAAs. I think they have a really exciting race coming down to the final two weekends still left in their conference. Where I think that Michigan State, Minnesota, Michigan, they're all kind of in that race for the top spot in the regular season title. And that's one of those conferences where nothing really matters. It's all single elimination playoffs. You play it all in the span of 3 days. The only thing you're trying to do in the regular season in that conference is finish first or second so that you don't have to play that first day and that it's two games to win a championship. I think that I'm not a big fan of their playoff system when you kind of compare it to the rest of college hockey. They don't have a better way to do it because they're only a six-team conference. But I'm just not a fan of this this basketball format, single elimination the whole way. I'd rather see them kind of spread it out over 3 weeks and have three best-of-three series and make it more NHL-like. That would be more exciting to me. They don't do that. I don't blame them for it. It's a budgetary thing. It's also a, can you keep your interest for three weekends? But this is a league where Wisconsin that has, just four wins on the season, I would never be surprised if they just ran the table and got into the NCAA tournament, and only had eight or nine wins by the end of the season. And it's just so realistic. We saw it when College Hockey America was around, and I believe it was Alabama Huntsville that was the team that kind of ran the table in the playoffs and won their single elimination games. And next thing you know, they're in the tournament with 12 wins. It's not something you expect to see in college hockey, but you can get hot, and in single elimination, that's really what hot is about.
And you mentioned Wisconsin, and it's really the Badgers that have kind of been the drag on the pairwise rankings for that whole conference. Just one win away from the Kohl Center this season, just two in conference. And the league in general, below 500 out of conference, including 2-14-0 against the NCHC. That's really the story on why you may only see one, possibly two, from the Big Ten.
I mean, yeah, look at the numbers, and the numbers are pretty simple. Michigan is 8-6 out of conference. Minnesota is 9-7-1, I guess. Everybody else is under 500. You have Michigan State is 6-8. You have Penn State is they're actually not that bad. They're 8-5-3. They're actually probably the best team out of conference in
the
Big
Ten. They had more Atlantic Hockey opponents and more Eastern opponents.
Ohio State, they're 5-7-2. Wisconsin, they're 2-10-2. Awful record. So yeah, your entire conference is pairwise is going to be dragged down when you just can't play out of conference. And listen, I've seen Michigan, I've seen Minnesota, I've seen Michigan State, and I've seen Penn State. I've seen four of those teams play, and I would hate to play any of those teams in a single elimination setting, but they don't even deserve to be in that if their out of conference rating is that bad. So, if Minnesota is the team that wins that tournament and they only get one team in, I don't feel too bad for the Big Ten. They haven't done what they need to do to be in a great position.
Well, that's our look at the Western teams. It looks like we're not going to be able to get with Coach Dick Umiele. Hopefully, we can schedule him for another time here on USCHO Live. I think right now it's time for us to take a break, Jim. We'll come back and try to get our next guest on, and that's veteran hockey writer Neil Koepke. And that's when we return here on USCHO Live from USCHO.com.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at USCHO.com.
The Frozen Four returns to Boston.
He buries it!
Be there and experience it live.
Score!
April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit NCAA.com/Frozen Four and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly.
and the miracles of technology, you can maybe not get somebody on their phone, but then some emails get sent and you find a way to talk to people. We have UNH head coach Dick Umiliani on the line. Dick, thanks for joining us, and sorry it's been such a headache trying to connect tonight.
No problem, guys. Glad to be on, and appreciate all you do for college hockey.
Well, it's a fun time of the year. I know that coaches seem to maybe look forward to it more, even more than players sometimes, the playoffs and what they mean. And you're gonna play a first round series against Connecticut in the Hockey East playoffs this weekend. You're gonna host the Huskies. But before we get into that, just a little bit about your team and kind of the roller coaster that you've been through this year, because the second half of your season obviously a lot stronger than the first.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Jimmy. We've got off to a slow start for a lot of reasons, goaltending situations, and then we got into, a lot of younger guys had to play in some key spots for us in key situations, and we had to be patient and, learn and learn through, experience, making some mistakes. We played pretty good hockey, but we couldn't win hockey games, or we found ways to lose hockey games. Just before the Christmas break, we had a great game against our rival Maine at the Portland Civic Center, where we came from behind, scoring four goals. And I think that was really where the team developed a lot of confidence. And that was with Brett Pesce, one of our top defensemen, still out. And yet the team with the younger guys stepped up and found a way to win and play together going into the break. And, since then, the second half, overall, we've played some pretty good hockey against some really good teams in our league.
One of the things that stands out is you had some problems off ice with the goaltender who you expected to come back this year, Casey DeSmith. And then you were left with a freshman, Adam Clark, and a junior, Jamie Regan, that, no experience in the between the nets. When you got to the Christmas break and you were able to bring in another goaltender, Daniel Tyrone, and his numbers look fantastic, a 10-4 record, 7.14 win percentage, 2.45 goals against, and a save percentage above .910. Talk about the process of bringing him in when you did, and what he maybe has meant to the confidence of this team as well.
Well, that was a difficult situation, not easy for somebody to come in the middle of the season. And I don't want to take anything away from Adam Clark, who was our freshman goaltender, who played just about every game, if not all the games, the first half. He did a pretty good job for us, but at the time, the team, we had a difficult time scoring goals. We were young on defense, playing typically four freshman defensemen, and we found ways to give up wins, losing a lot of one-goal games. So we just had to stay with it. And Danny Tirone, who was a goaltender that we had recruited for next year, we brought him in January. And he just came in along with Adam the very beginning of the second semester, added some competition, he got a couple of starts there and played well, and we've been going with him since, to take nothing away from Adam Clark.
How difficult was that decision for Daniel to make, to come in halfway through a season, knowing that that kind of throws off your whole cycle?
Yeah, no doubt. And, he's given up a half a year of his eligibility. There's no guarantee that he's going to play all the games. And he came in. He's a fierce competitor with an awful lot of confidence, a little bit different style than Adam Clark. He's smaller than Adam Clark, but, he anticipates plays, and he's very, very aggressive. And he found himself competing for game times and did a pretty good job, won some games, and we came back with him. And he's been on a roll, the last, 6 or 7 games, playing very, very well for us.
We're talking with UNH head coach Dick Umiliani. They're going to play UConn this weekend, a newcomer to Hockey East in the first round of the Hockey East playoffs. Before I get on to UConn, I want to mention some of your forwards and some of your goal scorers and even guys on the blue line. But I think you had an idea of some guys on the upper end of seniors that could perform. But Tyler Kelleher, who had a nice freshman year for you a season ago, he's now leading your team in scoring. After a 16-point freshman campaign, 37 points at this point his sophomore year, what has his progress and his development meant to your program?
You know what, Tyler's an excellent hockey player. He has an awful, he's very, very good with hockey sense and awful good with his stick. And you give him an opportunity to score goals or make plays. He plays along with one of our freshmen, Podorowski, who's like, he's very, very good playmaker, and he plays well. There's good chemistry between him and Kelleher, and they put up a lot of numbers here the second half, and he's a goal scorer. There's some guys that can score goals, and some guys that can help somebody score goals, but Tyler Kelleher is a goal scorer, along with Podorowski, and they've been pretty special for us the second half especially.
Well, another goal scorer, too, and I think he's a guy that I personally have watched and been waiting for him to become the goal scorer, is Matt Willows, and he has 18 goals for you in 34 games this season. I can remember a couple of years ago you talking about him as kind of an energy player, a third, fourth liner that brought a lot of energy. Now he's in that role. His numbers this year seem to show that he is stepping and comfortable in that role as a goal scorer.
Well, you know what? You would not have thought the way that he plays, and you know, Matty's an aggressive, tough, fast player, great forechecker, backchecker, and yet last season he put up 19 goals, and here he is again. He's going to probably score 20 goals again this season. But he, along with Grayson Downing, who's another one of our goal scorers, our playmakers. You know, we've put him and Casey Thrush together as a senior line, and they have really come through here the second half. Grayson, along with Matty Willows, scoring goals, and that's made a big difference for us, along with the younger guys like Kelleher and Podorowski scoring. So we've got balance in our scoring right now, and the younger guys on defense playing good defense. It's a good combination.
We're talking with Dick Umiley from UNH, University of New Hampshire. Six losses since the calendar turned to 2013. Your team seemingly playing pretty well in the second half. You face Connecticut this weekend in the first round of the Hockey East playoffs. You fought off that first half, fought into a place that you have home ice, and that you have to think is an advantage no matter who the opponent, but you know, particularly Connecticut, that came into your building a few weeks ago and you played very well against them.
Well, you know what? You got to give credit to Connecticut. You know, Mike Cavanaugh has done a terrific job. He was very instrumental in, along with Jerry York in Boston College. You know, he's been around. He knows how to coach. He's probably one of the young talents in college hockey, and he's done a terrific job with his team. And, you know, up until the very end here, you know, they were right there, and the goal scoring might have disappeared for a couple of weeks, but they're a team that plays very, very hard. They're well-coached, and they don't give you a whole lot of scoring opportunities, and they block a lot of shots. You know, Nichols is a goaltender that can win games, so it's going to be a matchup that's going to be a good one, and even though we had some success against them a couple of weeks ago, you know, it's playoff hockey right now, and it's another season, and I'm sure they're excited to be playing in the Hockey East playoffs as we are, and we're just fortunate to be playing at home. It's a lot better to play at home for a lot of reasons than to be on the road traveling.
Dick, you just mentioned Mike Cavanaugh and his ties back to Boston College. Do you wonder or maybe have some concern that a coach like that has been in so many playoff situations, not that in your 25 years that you haven't, but that this is a, you know, everybody can sit there and say, oh, rookie head coach, but he's been in a lot of big game situations and won a lot of those games. Do you worry that they have can game plan and throw something at you you maybe haven't seen?
No, I'm not going to say I'm not going to worry, because he's a talent as a coach, and yeah, he's been around. He was a great athlete himself, but we just got to play. You know, worry about ourselves right now, and hopefully we do what we do best. You know, the team that's going to be well prepared, and it's all going to be determined, you know, on the ice and how we play and what we do. And you know, at this point, it's not like he's a rookie coach. We're not going into this thinking that Connecticut, because they're a first-year team in Hockey East, that you know, it's going to be an easy weekend. That's the farthest thing from the truth right now. He's experienced. You know, Connecticut's been playing Division I college hockey, and I can tell you what, we went down to Hartford and played down there, and it was a fabulous atmosphere. It was great hockey, and they're going to be really bring a lot to Hockey East and Division One college hockey as far as success. There's no doubt about it. So we'll have a tough challenge. As I said earlier, it's a whole nother season right now. You can forget about the regular season, and it's all about this upcoming weekend.
Well, it should be a good weekend, a fun weekend in hockey. We love playoff hockey. We love long overtime games, things you can't see in the regular season. Your team seems to be an expert at those sometimes in the postseason. I don't wish those upon you this weekend because I know that's the ultimate heart attack for a coach. But Dick Umiele, New Hampshire head coach, we wish you the best of luck this weekend in the postseason, and hope we can catch up with you again soon.
All right, thanks, Jim. It's a great time for college hockey, playoff hockey, and we're looking forward to it.
That's New Hampshire coach Dick Umiele, and we'll be back with more of USCHO Live right after this.
This is USCHO Live. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at USCHO.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden.
Score!
Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trepsker, and we're going to be joined just in a moment by Jim Connolly and Neil Koepke. And we're going to bring Jim back right now. Hey, Jim. Jim, we're just going to bring you back. I wanted to let you guys figure out what was going on there and how many years while I was coming back for the break. And so why don't you go ahead and bring Neil on in?
Yeah, nothing like a quick transition. Joined by one of the legends of college hockey, and I really enjoy when we get to talk to a guy like this, and that's Neil Koepke, longtime writer at the Lansing State Journal covering Michigan State hockey. He now covers the Spartans for their website at the NCAA tournament time. You'll read about him. You read about college hockey by Neil on NCAA.com, and that's Neil Koepke. 35 Frozen Fours, is that right? Is that what we just figured out off the air?
Yeah, I think that's what it is, Jimmy. It was like started in 1977, and I had a little bit of a streak there going consecutive about 34 in a row, and then I had to miss the great 2011 one, won by the Duluth Bulldogs in overtime. I really disappointed I missed that one. And then I went to camp in Pittsburgh, and then I did not go to last year's in Philly. So it's been quite a run, and I wish I still had the streak going, but obviously I just made my reservations for Boston yesterday, so I'm excited about this one coming up.
Well, I can't wait to see you in Boston. I know we all feel that way. Neil, you're in Big Ten country, and we were just talking a couple segments ago that Big Ten, I think, had some pretty high aspirations for hockey, as does every conference, but the Big Ten maybe not living up to everything, at least in the national landscape this year. Possibility of just one Big Ten tournament team in the tournament. Is there kind of a panic mode over there these days?
No, I don't think so. I think they knew that when the Big Ten was formed, you know, no one knew who was going to be like in position to really compete for a high level or whatever. And with Penn State coming on, it basically brought in a team that maybe taken a few years. I think one of the big surprises is that Penn State's been able to, in their second year in the Big Ten, third year overall, to be as good competitive as they have been in such a quick time. And I don't think anyone even suspected that Wisconsin would be down the second year of the Big Ten after, you know, almost being in the NCAA tournament last year and being a Frozen Four contender, because that was really a good Wisconsin team last year that won the playoff title. And, you know, we're a bounce or two away from beating North Dakota and being in the Frozen Four last year. So I think what's happened is that Wisconsin losing those 11 players, I believe it was 9 seniors and 2 underclassmen, and 2 great underclassmen too, by the way, like All-America, All-Conference types. And they basically are a retooling, rebuilding organization there. And then Minnesota started out like they were the best team in the country. Nobody thought they were, and then they hit that skid. And ever since then, they've been playing very well, but they haven't risen up in the pairwise or the polls that much. But they are a viable factor with one of the great things about Minnesota that you look at, they have 8 defensemen on their roster, and all 8 have been drafted by NHL teams, and 6 to play. And that's a phenomenal defense when you consider that most schools would love to have 2 guys drafted or 3, and they've got 8. And they've got quite a bit of a good scoring call. And I would say that despite Michigan's prominence in the last few weeks with their run, their wealth of goals, Minnesota probably has the better balance team and the better goaltending and the better defense. Michigan has a better offensive game, and their weakness is defense and goaltending. So you'd almost say that Minnesota is better for the long run, but you never know. Those 2 teams have been prominent, and yet they're not unbeatable, as Michigan State proved last weekend when they went to Minnesota and almost won the first night, losing 4-5 to 4 after being up 3-0. And then on the second night, when you thought they might lose because Minnesota had their number 1 goalie in net and the Spartans lost a key defenseman, and we're, you know, sort of had that bogged down feeling about blowing a 3-goal lead the first night, the Spartans played their best game of the year and won a close one, 4-2. So that shows that those 2 teams are very good, but they're not unbeatable. And Penn State has been able to beat Michigan, and Penn State has been able to beat Minnesota so far. So it's really a lot. The teams in the Big Ten are beating up each other with a lot of wins that you might not expect it. So there's the only weak team in the league really that struggled is Wisconsin, and Ohio State did there for a while. But Ohio State now has much of their meat from their offense. Matt Johnson and a few others that were injured are back. And so Ohio State suddenly is competitive. Ohio State sweeps Penn State last week. No one saw that coming. And the week before, they beat Michigan in Columbus. So we'll see about Ohio State, because this weekend, guys, they play host to Minnesota in what's a very, very key series for battling for the top 2 spots in the league.
Yeah, and those top 2 spots become ultra competitive and ultra important, because it is a single elimination playoff, and the 2 teams that finish 1 and 2 get a bye all the way to the league semifinals, which I think a lot of teams in this country would look at, especially the guys that have to play first round and quarterfinal rounds to get there.
Exactly.
They would,
yep,
think of that as a great luxury. Talk a little bit about the Michigan State team that you see a lot. I love what Tom Anastas has done with that team, especially building it seemingly from the defensive side out. They play very good defense. They have a good goaltender. Maybe goals don't always come that easy, but when they score, they seem to be a very successful club.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's almost like, as Tom says, in a lot of college hockey these days, and certainly in the Big Ten and the West, almost the first team to score 3 goals is going to win the game, because it's so close and so competitive. And teams scout each other so well. They know how to shut each other down. Goaltending has been very good mostly. Now, in the Big Ten, we thought this was the year of the goaltender, and as it turned out, goaltending hasn't been all that good, except at Michigan State and a little bit at Minnesota. Everybody else has sort of like struggled through here and there, but you're right. Tom has built the team back from a defensive type of concept where we need to be great in our zone and then let our offense come at the wealth of our defense by getting the puck up faster, moving it quicker, and working hard in the zone. I think the key, the two keys at Michigan State's improvement from last year and early the first part of this year is development. And development, what I mean by, is players sticking with the system and getting better here and there, whether it was the juniors and the sophomores. They're just becoming more of a team that is playing the system and developing. They're better skilled. They're better in front of the net. They're going to that better. The defense has helped. And obviously you can't take away Jake Hildebrand, probably the all-star goaltender, all-conference goalie in the Big Ten. He's been dominant. He's been great, consistent. So you go into a game knowing that you're probably going to be in position to win because you're goaltending. And then if you can execute some specialty teams, especially killing penalties, and then maybe capitalizing on one power play goal or so, you're going to be in position to win. The Spartans are scoring better. Not great. But, again, because of their defensive concept, they are able to win games against a team like Michigan or Minnesota, Penn State or whatever, by way of staying in there. And if they can score three goals, chances are they're going to be in the game to win it. And maybe if they have an off night, they might lose it. But that is the key. And Tom has stressed patience. And it's tough to do in this day and age because you're always sort of based on your last game. And if you lose two in a row or three or four, people are down. The internet gets going with, like, what's going on? But they've been very patient and very realistic about what they can expect from this team. It's still a year or two away from having the top end, more of a top end player, skill player. But I think for right now, they're getting a winning culture, and that's going to make a difference, I think, in the next couple of years.
We're speaking with Neil Koepke. The team that really got the whole Big Ten thing going was Penn State elevating its program. Last season, they upset Michigan, came close with Wisconsin in the league championship. Almost, they were on the doorstep of the NCAAs last year. Is it really, though, a surprise at what Guy Gadowski has done with that team?
I think it's a surprise just because they recruited different. They brought in some transfers. They used some club players. And yet that one season where they were just playing a club / non-conference schedule, I think helped them develop. And last year, if you look at it, their record wasn't very good, and they still managed to beat Michigan last year 3 of 5 times, I believe. And really, you could say single-handedly, guys, they kept Michigan out of the NCAA tournament last year with those three victories. And obviously one of them, the question was in the Big Ten tournament. I think it was double overtime, and that was a surprise. But I think we're not surprised at Guy Gadowski and having success just because he did it in Alaska with the team that he basically built, a very competitive team in the CCHA that came down. And every now and then against Michigan State, against Miami, they were competitive and won games. Then he moved on to Princeton, and I believe he, led them to first place 1 year and into the NCAA tournament. So he has a habit, a resume of building teams, being patient. And so when he got the job at Penn State, I think everyone said that is probably the right move, the great move, because he can build a team and he won't be pushed to do it in too fast of a way. And yet he's got one of the best lines there with Casey Bailey and his other two wingers there that have been like very, very exciting. Like, I've not seen a better line in person this year. There are obviously the BU line is obviously outstanding and probably the number one, but they're right behind. Unfortunately, I think Goodwin, one the center there, has got an injury and may not play this week and so forth. So that's going to hurt them. But I'm not surprised that Guy in the development, but I'm surprised, I guess, that it's happened in the third year, because going into last week's games before they got, upset, they were 16-10 and 4 overall, and that is a pretty good record, even if a little bit of a soft schedule by scheduling some Atlantic hockey teams there and some beating up on some earlier. But then again, that was the purpose. That drove some confidence, and before you know it, they even got ranked and were doing very well in the Big Ten and probably were being considered probably a favorite to at least finish third. That may not happen now with the late season surge by Michigan State and maybe a little bit of a letdown by Penn State. But still, it's good. And once you get in the tournament, I mean, Penn State, whether they finish third or fourth, they could be in one of those semifinal games and could pull off an upset too.
We're now near the end of the second season of the Big Ten. And, of course, it helped juggle the landscape of college hockey quite a bit. But a couple interesting things that the Big Ten has precipitated. One is the ability for some leagues, for instance, Hockey East also now with 12 teams having a lot more non-conference games, but the Big Ten also offering a lot more non-conference games. There are a couple of things there I'd like to get your take on. One is just the overall general change of the landscape of college hockey and scheduling, but also the way the Big Ten has chosen to schedule a whole kind of front-loading all the non-conference stuff because it's such a big schedule before Christmas, and then just this sprint down the way in conference.
Well, it's really become a basketball model. They follow the basketball model that they can, and basically most conferences in NCAA basketball. It's like a month or so or month and a half or so of non-conference games, then you start your schedule in December. That's been a little bit of an adjustment for the fans, I think, because they're used to, like, October, Michigan State, Lake Superior, Bowling Green or whatever. But I think what's happened here, at least, is the Big Ten has got such an aura about it, and it's really, for the young fans, that's what everybody knows. So those fans are basically happy to see the Wisconsins and the Minnesotas coming here, and then Penn State, because it's a name and a brand that they identify with. On the other hand, conference, non-conference games early, but what it's done for not only Michigan State, but Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State and so forth and Wisconsin, Minnesota, is allow them to schedule high-level non-conference games and more than just 2, 4, 6 that they used to because of all their tournaments and whatnot. So Michigan State's been able to, you know, play Lowell and play BC and BU. And next season they start, I believe, with the Icebreaker Tournament where they're going to play involved with Maine and Ferris State. I'm not sure what the third or fourth team is out there, but that's one tournament they'll go to. And the following week, guys, they go to Denver. And then over Thanksgiving, they host North Dakota. And in the future, starting in 2 years or so, Notre Dame comes back on the schedule. And then they're still going to try to work things with BU and BC and probably even Harvard. And next year, too, I think it's like December 15th, the Spartans are going to Northeastern to play, along with men's basketball and women's basketball. So it's like three games and like two nights or whatever on a Friday and Saturday, and that's right before Christmas. And that's something that Mark Hollis, the AD here, has scheduled with Northeastern as like a different type of tournament, whatever, or non-conference games. So that helps exposure. I'm not sure if Northeastern is coming back here this year, the year after that, but that's a big difference. I think one of the things that I miss, and I think probably the fans here in this league would miss, and probably along with Wisconsin and Minnesota, is it always was fun when the season ended to have those first and second round playoff games. Now you don't get those. Now you go right to, again, like the Big Ten basketball, right? Everybody goes to one site and plays and all that. So I think that's really a thing that you're going to have to get used to. And I think last year it was like different, like the season ends, boom, like the 15th. And by that time, we were playing our second round of the CCHA. And so that is something that the fans have to get used to, that there's no buys. And just like, you know, the Hockey East and the ECAC are doing this weekend to start their playoffs, and next weekend with the other two leagues out west. That's a different thing. But what this is also, that Penn State move and the Big Ten thing, has allowed the WCHA to sort of like put together a bunch of schools that are basically their own level or size. And so it's allowed, I think, Minnesota State, Michigan Tech, Bowling Green, Ferris, or whatever, to play in a conference in which they are the big leagues or whatever, and they can actually maybe have their route to the NCAAs easier than what it would have been if Minnesota State would have been in the old W and Michigan or Bowling Green in the old CCHA. And at the same time, it allowed the National Collegiate Hockey Conference to form with some great teams and some great schools that really has turned out this year to be probably the strongest, or along with Hockey East, is the strongest conferences in the league or in the country. And now if they're going to get five teams in the NCAA, that's really a big boost for that conference, and yet very, very well deserving, because those schools have really played well in non-conference play and obviously have shown that they're among the elite teams and so forth. So it's one of those things. We're only in the second year of the revamped format, and I think hopefully by the time we get to year 5 or 6, we'll be settled into maybe some changes and maybe some additions if the Big Ten can attract some more schools. It may take a few more years, but I think that's what's ahead of us. But for now, I think the Big Ten and the fans are willing to be patient and just see how it all plays out. This year, the Big Ten is not living up to maybe the power expectations, but that doesn't mean in the next 3, 4, or 5 years that it won't take hold and you're going to have some powerful teams, maybe 3, 4 in the Big Ten, just like the other conferences.
Jim, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I think
I am. I accidentally hit mute, and that was my problem.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
What I was trying to say was that we're talking with Neil Koepke, one of the hockey legends of journalism. He covers the Big Ten these days. Neil, one last question before we let you go. The Big Ten tournament, it's unique. It's basketball-like, where it's a single elimination tournament, six teams. You got to win either two or three games to win the tournament. Which team is built best for that, to play two, maybe 3 days in a row and come out as a champion?
I would think you'd still have to look at Michigan and Minnesota as the two best teams. And even if Minnesota or Michigan should slide down to three, yes, obviously that third game, if they win the first two, would be tough to play, like Ohio State did last year. But you got to remember, guys, Ohio State was 6 minutes away with a two-goal lead against Wisconsin at winning that title and getting in the NCAA tournament. And had they done that, Wisconsin would have been in still. North Dakota would have been out, and North Dakota would have been in that position to upset Wisconsin. So Wisconsin sort of like was their worst enemy by beating Ohio State and then setting up that format. Obviously, you would never know that, but still, I would think Michigan, Minnesota, especially Minnesota, because they got the good defense. And when you get into those tournament games, as you guys well know, your mentality changes, and now you're worried about defense a little more. And those two teams are run and gun, but they still would have to worry about defense. And I think that's where Minnesota gets the edge over Michigan, because even if Michigan tries to focus on defense, their defenseman trying to get the puck up the ice has not been good this year. And even though they have a great guy in Zach Greinke and a good defensive guy in Michael Downing, they can't play the whole game. They got other players that have to. And that's where Michigan's vulnerable. And then their goaltending is so roller coaster, up and down, you never know. So I think Minnesota, with goaltending and defense, would probably be more favorable to come out of there and get a number one, or not number one seed, but get a good seed and basically get in the tournament. If Michigan doesn't win a couple games here, like you just said earlier, they could be on the bubble, and Michigan's last four games of the season against Penn State and Michigan State, you know, two teams that are involved here, and only one is going to put the pressure on Michigan, because if they don't win a bunch of those games, they go 2-2, then they really got to almost tournament, or at least one or two games, to have a chance to get in the NCAA tournament.
Well, Neil Koepke, we appreciate your time.
Well, Jim broke up a little bit, but Neil, we do thank you, and look forward to seeing you in Boston.
Okay, guys. Good talking to you.
All right, and we'll be back with the rest of USCHO Live right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden.
Score!
Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
Wrapping things up in an extended version of USCHO Live, I'm Ed Trefsker with Jim Connolly. Don't forget, the NCAA reminds you not to get left out in the cold this spring. Be there as the best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27th through 29th. And continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 to make a date with champions. Or as Barry Melrose once said to me, will beats skill. As the sometimes the underdogs who really pull it off, pull through with that. One ranked matchup this weekend, and this should be a good one. In fact, the Friday game will be televised nationally on CBS Sports Network, and that is number one North Dakota at number five Miami. They play Friday and Saturday. It's a doubleheader on that network, Denver at St. Cloud State, a couple of big NCHC games to wrap up the season. North Dakota needs just 1 point to wrap up the Penrose Cup for that league. Minnesota State, just edging right now. They just got a 3-point lead over number four Michigan Tech, and the Mavericks are at Bemidji State while the Huskies are home and home in Northern Michigan. And then in the East, as we talked about at the beginning of the program, Atlantic Hockey, ECAC Hockey, and Hockey East all have four best of three first round series in each.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of good series that stand out. You know, I think in Atlantic Hockey, I really look at that Air Force AIC series. Not that AIC is the biggest tournament threat, but Air Force has been such a dominant team in that Atlantic Hockey tournament. They did not earn themselves a bye. They were able to get home ice in that first round, but not the performance you would hope for this season from Air Force. So can they be the postseason team that a lot of people think, in Christ, Sacred Heart, nobody wants to touch them right now. I feel bad for Army having to play them. But then in Hockey East, I look at a team like Vermont that is kind of NCAA bubble-ish, and they're going to play Maine, knowing that they have to get through this weekend. They probably have to get through another weekend, get to the Garden, and then maybe even need to win a game there to find their way into the tournament. That was a team that was such a lock. And Harvard in the ECAC, they're kind of in the same position where, you know, these teams probably hit Christmas saying, boy, NCAA tournament, can't wait. And the second half of the season has been rude and awakening for both of them. So I think there's a lot on the line in these tournaments beyond just wins and losses in the tournament. There's a lot of teams that are playing for their NCAA life, and that'll all start on Friday night.
One other pair of games I'd like to mention, because they will be nationally televised, ESPNU on Friday and ESPN News on Saturday, number 15 Minnesota at Ohio State.
Yeah, that Friday game, if you're in Canada, catch it on TSN, TSN2 actually. But big games for that conference to be nationally televised. But I also think that Minnesota, you know, they're in position to be in the tournament right now. And these two games out at Ohio State, and you heard Neil say they're playing pretty good hockey right now. Dangerous, dangerous games. They need to come away with a couple of victories to hold that footing and don't make it the possibility that every team in the Big Ten could be outside of the bubble of the pairwise, and only the tournament champion would even have a chance. That, you know, them and Michigan really are carrying flags right now. So both of those teams need to play some good hockey here to close the season.
Well, I hope everyone enjoys the hockey this weekend. Let's wrap it up, Jim. We'll catch you. Okay. I don't know if I muted myself or
I think you muted
there.
Yourself, yeah.
Yeah, I had a sneeze coming on, and so anyway, no cough switch here at my home studio. Anyway, we'll catch you next Tuesday night for USCHO Live as we head towards the NCAAs. By the way, we'll be live with the USCHO Live at the Frozen Four each day in Boston. We're looking forward to that as well.
Should be a lot of fun. I can't wait for Boston. Let's get there soon.
All right. We'll catch you next time and catch you later, Jim.